Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
See this gnarled and ancient hawthorn tree? Its trunks consist of knotted socks, sodden gloves, crumpled sleeves, and stockings. These ragged offerings have rotted through the years with the weight of the prayers of the faithful, begging for recovery, for solace, for relief. Sometimes angels and saints might attend here to answer those prayers. Sometimes other cruel creatures gather to laugh at human frailties. The opening paragraphs from a new debut work, which I have to say, having purchased it a few hours ago, I have worked my way through. I found it a complete page-turner, an absolute riveting read, and we're delighted to feature for this week's Author of the Week from County Meath in Ireland, Colin Leonard. How are you, Colin?
I'm very good, thank you, Alex. That's a lovely reading you did there. You nailed it.
Well, sure enough, I tried to actually incorporate my old McCormick background in the whole thing without necessarily going down the line of accents. Still, it's County Sligo for my good self. But a really astounding little text in which initially I thought, oh, fine, an Irish horror is all going to be about leprechauns. Well, of course, they might be seriously savage leprechauns. But then midway through the actual text, I'm thinking, this is not really a horror story. It's a crime police procedural. But actually, then it turns into horror. And you seem to have blended the genres very effectively in terms of that. I mean, certainly the police officer that we encounter, Declan Maguire, of course, not the nicest of individuals, but perhaps a confused bloke would be the best summing up of the whole thing.
Yeah, he's certainly not nice. I guess he's more from the Harvey Keitel Bad Lieutenant school of policing than the Heartbeat style. But he's a particularly selfish and self-serving individual. And with the book as well, I tried, apart from the crime and the horror, I wanted to make it as much about the characters and the character study in Irish society as much as anything else.
Well, that certainly comes across. I mean, for me, one of the favourite characters who sadly, spoiler alert, comes to a bit of an unfortunate end is Roisin, Roisin, exactly. I mean, I had a feeling that she might be, you know, the key sort of sir, etc. But not a good end for Roisin. Still, I suppose if you are going to set up a gothic shrubbery, you might not be surprised when that sort of ends up in, or you end up in that particular way. I mean, a sigh of relief, again, mini spoiler alert, etc., that Luke Sheridan and his wife and child seem to have actually escaped. Although when we say seemed, I mean, the opportunity for a sequel is presumably there. I mean, obviously they're still wanting to get away from this dream cottage. They've actually taken this dream stint into the countryside. And I love the way in which you describe the shift from Dublin to this part of the Irish backwater, which initially seems as though it's going to be ideal. And of course, the first time that Luke encounters the neighbours, it's actually at a funeral. A wonderful sort of sequence that you actually get there. So lots of areas there, which I, again, from my own background, and it's many years since I was last in Ireland, but I certainly remember in terms of Sligo, Balnafad, etc., those kind of community aspects were very much there, in which you do have, you know, traditional farmhouses, traditional areas that are actually based there. And clearly one of the things that has changed in Ireland, which I think you allude to in the text, is the whole notion of a world which is more secular, a world which doesn't necessarily have the authority of the church, which is in there. It's still actually there, but there isn't so much reliance on the powers of the church, shall we say, to effectively deal with the monsters and characters that actually emerge accordingly. Was that a deliberate approach to actually address the text?
It was, and funny enough that you said about maybe a sequel, I actually wrote it nearly as a prequel, because I was planning on a broader one. You referenced the evil, nasty creatures in this one. I had started, and I'm continuing, a novel with a broader range of nasty creatures from Irish mythology, but I wrote this one just as they were kind of arising and coming into our contemporary society. And what if such creatures and such supernatural entities that legend have said we've had to deal with, and in ancient times, if they came back into our world, how would we deal with them, and what kind of disaster management, in a sense, would we be looking at? But yeah, that's we kind of see our characters trying to deal with the initial outbreak of that.
Well, Declan, I suppose not the best person you'd want to have on your side. But then, having said that, there's a kind of laissez-faire attitude because even his fellow members of the Garda, the Irish police force, they're not exactly prompt in their responses to outgoing calls and emergencies and so on.
No, and there's obviously around the time the novel, I said it's around the late the 2000s, around 2007, 2008, at that time in Ireland as well, there were some scandals involving the guards. There was a lot of stuff with urban expansion that I've tried to bring into the novel. So it tries to reflect the Ireland of that time, just before the crash, as it were.
Well, we're going to bring in our special guest singer-songwriter and indeed huge fan of Stranger Things in a few moments. But before we do that, I've got to actually give a little nod in the direction of Connor, who indeed this was, because originally looking at the actual pitching of this, I thought, yeah, it's the noughties, it's the 2007, 2008, etc. But then, of course, you have Connor as a podcaster. And a line from that, which clearly was around then, because there were like two or three waves of podcasting from that point of view. So would you say he was an early adopter of technology for his podcast? Of course, not as far as I'm aware, available, Album of the Week.
Yes, he was starting out, but he was in a sense kind of a rogue podcaster, because he doesn't exactly care about things like copyright or the legality of it. But again, he's and I've been told he's the favorite or the most sympathetic character to a lot of readers. But that could be because of shared musical taste. Maybe he's
Yeah, I
That
mean,
that's his religion.
I thought he was interesting. What it lost it for me was basically when he took the sawn-off shotgun and took a whole different line to the whole system. But that's and I think there was one moment where there's always almost a suggestion that he has gone completely postal on the whole thing. No, I think for me, the favorite character trope that we'd actually go down the line would probably be Luke's wife, basically. Because I thought that she was Sophie, I think did
Sophie,
ex ex yeah, I mean she to actually cope with that level of stress, I think deserves
yeah.
special credit and kudos. Anyway, Chloe Rose, recently released single, all available now, Shot You Down. Lord knows that ties in very much with the text that we're considering today and our author today, the creator, of course, of Country Roads. Nothing to do with John Denver, just want to make that quite clear. You go into this expecting, Martin Mama and a whole range of other factors, you're not going to get it, okay? Although County Meath does have some high hills, I think. It's not necessarily
We
the sort of,
do.
yeah.
Well, we're famous flatlands, but around where I am in County Meath, we have big hills, Lochcrew Hills, and all our hills in County Meath are fairly famous, as it were, the Hill of Tara and the like.
Yeah, exactly, but not quite as big as you get in the
In
Appalachians, shall we say?
no.
So, Chloe, I don't know if you've had a chance to read the preview or any. I mean, have you got any questions you want to put to Colin at present about Country Roads again, his debut novel from County Meath in Ireland? And actually, Chloe, I know although you're based in the joys of say Humberside, Lincolnshire, Skegness, Grimsby, all the glamorous places. Have you ever been over to County Meath yourself?
I haven't, but I would absolutely love to go, and especially if I'm going to meet some monsters, then
Yeah, but you
no,
do want to meet the
but
monsters that Colin's writing about, honestly. Or at least if
no,
you do, you want to see them in the whole cold light of
yes,
day. Don't go at
and
night.
don't go
Absolutely.
near any spooky looking trees either.
Oh, it's all quite exciting. I feel like it's kind of a book that I would read because I absolutely love monsters anyway. Not in a, I'd be frightened if it actually I came across a monster. But obviously, as Alex was saying, I love things like Stranger Things and the story that you've written, it sounds really interesting. I've just read a little bit of, a bio around the actual story. But I was really interested to sort of know what inspired you to kind of write about monsters. What got you into wanting to write those types of novels in the first place, I guess.
Well, with this one, it's funny enough, I would have traveled a good bit, and on my travels, I was obsessed by masks from different countries, and the
Oh.
spookier, the better. And when I came back, I was a little disappointed that Ireland doesn't, despite the fact that we have things like banshees and cluricaunes and the slua and all sorts of spooky monsters, we don't have masks that we develop of them. So I thought maybe I'll get into that, but I'm not quite a mask maker. I am a writer, however, so at the same time I was writing my short stories and getting more into the horror genre, I said, well, all this research I've done for making masks, I will bring that instead of writing about vampires, I'm going to write about Irish monsters and bring the Celtic mythology into contemporary horror.
It's quite exciting. I'm sort of wanting to read it myself. When did you actually start knowing that you was going to be a writer? Like, when did you have that instant, oh my gosh, this is for me sort of thing?
Since I was a kid, like so many people say, I would have in secondary school won some writing competitions. I studied, moved on to study English literature without any direction for a job or anything like that. But as you can see, I'm not exactly a spring chicken, and this is my debut novel. So life took me in various different directions before I was able to hammer down into the publishing industry as such and make a determined effort to do that. But I've always been writing and had various things published in little magazines in the early 2000s, and short stories and anthologies here and there. But as I say, I made a concerted effort with this being my first novel that I completed to get it published and really try to research the industry over the last little while.
And as I said earlier, it's rare that I can find that when we feature a new author. I mean, obviously, one does one's best being a professional researcher to actually read through the book. But this was one in which the 250 pages passed like that, or
No way.
thereabouts. It literally was with one which was quite lit, a page turner, which had you gripped from the initial onset onwards. So I think for a debut novel, it certainly is an excellently crafted piece. But then, Colin, you do, of course, have the legacy of Bram Stoker, who was indeed Irish based. And indeed, the Bram Stoker Award, and of course, the creator of a certain incarnation of Vlad the Impaler, aka Count Dracula, emerged from, of course, Bram Stoker's theatrical routine. So there is a legacy of Gothic horror in particular. Although this really isn't Gothic horror, is it? I mean, this is, if anything, kind of eco horror, perhaps.
You might say I've described it as folk horror in a sense, because of the rural setting, the hints of folklore and old legends. It kind of veers, I suppose, more towards the folk horror side of the genre. But yeah, we have tons of Sheridan Le Fanu, of course, was Irish. Oscar Wilde was a horror writer, but even you'll find a strain of the grotesque has always gone through a lot of Irish literature, I think, which lends itself well to horror.
I noted that I think with just one exception, you avoid mentioning any musicians or any music by name. You kind of refer to genres throughout. I think there's only one where you kind of make a little nod in the direction of the actual. Was that a deliberate approach, or was it a case of, I've already criticized one of my characters for avoiding copyright. I don't want to risk anything here.
There's a little bit of that. Oh, there's a few. I think Luke, one of our main characters, is a big music fan as well, and talks about he's quite an eclectic taste where he likes Aphex Twin and a lot of that kind of stuff as well. But yeah, the music was very important to me as well while writing it. So, and I kind of each character I would have known their tastes. Declan is too much of a horrible person to appreciate music, though.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to like Declan Maguire, but unfortunately, progressively, I mean, even from the opening sequence that we see where he almost strangles somebody who's basically wants to arrest because of poor road safety. Incidentally, I would actually put a caveat, Chloe, on this particular book. For goodness sake, do not under any circumstances ever look to drink and drive. Although a lot of the characters actually do imbibe alcohol and go off on various other bits and pieces, including the aforementioned Declan Maguire, it's illegal and you can fall into all sorts of trouble if you do that. Just a minor caveat, Colin, that I thought was important from that perspective.
Yep.
But ultimately, I say Declan kind of goes through, I mean, and ultimately, you almost feel as though his punishment, which presumably is a form of madness, is almost too good for him. You know, you kind of expect, well, you know, why is it if Roisin can actually sort of be chewed up? But what's wrong with Declan? Why does he look out, basically end up as the next door neighbor behind the gate who nobody wants to speak to?
Well, this is the thing with Declan, and we say we don't like him as a character, but if he was your buddy, I'll tell you, there'd be no one else you'd prefer to go out for a pint with.
And that includes presumably our podcaster as well.
Yes.
What about the bus driver? What about the bus driver and the guy who actually drives the bus from Dublin and the community? I mean, I thought the wonderful way in which you actually said, if only, well, if he hadn't actually woken up Luke, he could have just could have spent the time quite happily on the bus, really.
Yeah, exactly. And I've fallen asleep on buses myself. That's a little Irish colour there now that isn't exactly exaggerated, let's say. In fact, it could be toned down compared to some of the characters you'll meet on Irish buses.
I've already cited that one of my favourite characters is certainly Luke's wife, Sophia. W women do actually play quite a key role in this, even though arguably in some instances you could say, well, they also suffer quite a great deal because of, in Luke's case in particular, from that point of view. Was that something you were looking to consciously address in terms of the balance of the whole thing? Because again, Sophie's approach really. Understandably, she's scared and frightened, but ultimately, she is the heroine who manages to actually keep both her child and the neighbor's child safe.
Yeah, Sophie is, if I was to ask for life advice off any of them, it probably would be Sophie. So, and yeah, I did try and balance that. But again, it's Luke was never going to be the hero in this story, really, I think. But and some people might wonder what Sophie is doing with him, but he's got his good points as well. But yeah, Sophie steps up all right.
Yeah, I got the feeling with Luke, he was probably easily led when he was at university with Declan. I got the sense that you know their university days were packed full of times where kind of you know maybe Luke needed to just say no. That's all, just say no. But anyway, Chloe, any other questions you'd like to put to Colin?
Yeah, so I'd being a songwriter, I know it's slightly different, but it's still similar. It's around the similar line. I'd just love to know kind of what your process is. Do you sort of write at night time? When does your inspiration come? Is it within the week? Is it even in the morning? Do you listen to music while you're writing? I'm just kind of interested to know what kind of inspires you to write in that process. Do you, I don't know, write a few sentences down on paper and then that cup becomes into a chapter. I don't know. I'm just wondering how it sort of comes into a full novel. I'm intrigued because I just do one song, which could be one chapter. You do everything, you see. Yeah.
Sure. So it's no, I can't pick a particular time because, and I can't really wait for inspiration to come. I have to
Yeah.
With a busy life, obviously, I have to write when I get the chance. So I would listen to music while I'm thinking about it, while I'm planning it in my head, that sort of thing. I would take notes after that. I'm a big fan of the Google Sphere, so I do my notes in Google Keep. So if I'm daydreaming off and thinking about plot twists and character traits, I'll stop, make notes on them, and use them as a basis for my. I try and write every day. Now I take breaks at particular times. If I finished a long piece or whatever, I might take a break, but I'll try and do at least 200 words a day. And oftentimes it's usually more, but if I can sit down and just get that 200 words down. And again, it can be like going to the gym or going for a run or anything else. You just have to break that seal, and once you're out there doing it,
Once you're
then it's
on,
fine.
it's flowing,
yeah
yeah.
yeah
Do you sorry, I'm just really interested.
sure
Have you got any more like novels that you're currently writing? Any more ideas that you could give us a snippet of or a bit of mystery about the next thing that's coming out, you know?
I have completed the early drafts of another novel, which is a possession story set in the city in Dublin. So it's as opposed to country roads, this is city buildings, but it's a possession story that morphs into kind of a cult style story. So
Oh, this sounds good. Is the monsters in it at all, or is it definitely no monsters?
no, it's more it's more demon based.
Wow. Okay, that still sounds great. Anything
Yeah.
like that's really interesting. That'll be one to watch out for then.
It
Very
will,
good.
hopefully.
Yes, I'm sure you'll be smashing it. You're doing fantastic. So, keep doing what you're doing. That's
Oh,
it, isn't
thanks. Yeah,
it?
there's
Yeah.
a few short stories out at the moment as well in anthologies. There was one just announced that's from Crystal Lake Publishing, are taking on my story, The Samhain Tapes, which is obviously a traditional Irish story as well, but that's one of my meanest and nastiest little stories.
Would you like to just
Sounds
share with
good.
us the Samhain Tapes in terms of the backdrop of that? Because it may not have translated across the Irish Sea.
Sure, the Samhain being the Irish version of Halloween, the old Irish version of Halloween, but this is a found footage story that was inspired actually by this a wonderful website, Dúchas.ie, which is put together by the Irish Folklore Commission, that gathers all old oral stories and traditions from around the world. So this is based on a tape found by a member of the Irish Folklore Commission, and some terrible things that happened to him.
Just returning back to Country Roads, I mean,
Okay.
there were a number of what I call LOL laugh out loud moments there, not least of which, of course, is the child Willie, who, of course, his mother wishes him to actually be called Willie, but his father, of course, Declan, clean for, very clear for him to actually be called Bill, because obviously you don't want to have little Willie. I thought you, presumably, were you referring to the sweet classic of the time by Brian Connolly and Company and Little Willie? Or were we talking about Free Willie, as in the killer whale who was once freed? Or was it just a case of
Love
Little
that
Willie, as
film.
in a very small individual?
No, we're talking about Little Willie, as in the schoolyard
Small.
kids
Yeah.
naming him after a penis.
There you are. I thought that might have been it, but there was I thinking it might have been because you were inspired by the classic song by The Sweet from 1973, called Little Willie. But there we are. Still, there we are. That's another line entirely. Nothing to do with genitalia at all. Just wanted to make that quite clear. Okay, moving on. In terms of the position of rurality and horror and such like, I also got a sense of lots of cinematic elements here. And there is a moment where Willie actually points to the window and says, "Monster, monster," which is very sort of, I think, quite emotive. And there are lots of cinematic treats that are actually here. Before we talk about, you know, obviously, I'm sure that people will be battling down to get the rights to this novel to produce at least a Netflix movie, if nothing else, from that point of view. Do you feel as though you have been influenced by any of the cinema? Because horror has, as we've said, a long and august tradition from both the universal horror monsters right the way through to the urban horror, the possession horror, eco-horror, as we've said, urban horror, or rural horror, as you said. What influences have you had, Colin? Or was it a case of, no, I couldn't stand any horror writers when I was growing up, and if anybody offered me any Frank Herbert, I said, go away.
No, I absolutely loved horror writers and horror movies. Between the kind of late 70s stuff like Exorcist and Omen, that was very kind of hardcore creepy, into things like Poltergeist was, and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the Sutherland version, and then I was also into, and you'll probably see the influence of Gremlins and Critters and that kind of schlocky 80s horror as well. But recently there's been some absolutely wonderful Irish horror movies, and just the tone of them, the things like You Are Not My Mother, which was out recently and deals with the changeling myth wonderfully, and The Hole in the Ground from a little while ago, also The Cured, but they're all very dark and grim, a little oppressive, but while also harking to a particular type of Irish fear and terror.
I mean, again, it's intriguing that there is something about horror that almost connects with comedy. We've talked about this with many writers in the past, that there are a lot of connections between comedic gag line and, of course, the horror relief and the sci-fi. And you have lots of moments here in the text of Country Roads where, you know, there are lines where you think, oh, I don't want to go down that line. Of course, within rural Ireland, darkness is very much a key thing. When it is dark, it is completely dark. And if you've only got a torch which isn't working, etc., or you haven't replaced your car tyre because it's been burst and so on, you've got a lot of challenges within that, which is why I thought the monsters that we see in this novel, again, I thought, are they simply mutated leprechauns, or do they have a background in that? I mean, you see, I'm not going to let that leprechaun trope go, basically. I still think, you know, sure, where's me lucky charms is a line that should have actually emerged somewhere in this text.
No, we wouldn't put that in there. There's more than leprechauns are like the happy cousins of these guys, as it were. Cluricons, or on Far Darrig, the red man, which is similar to the red caps you guys have over there, are nastier. So whereas a leprechaun might play a little trick on you by hiding something or whatever, these guys are going to mutilate animals. They're going to kill people. They're going to, and the one thing about them as well was they were very under the influence of alcohol most of the time, and that made them crankier.
And we said at the start, there are elements here of a police procedural in the text. Was that a deliberate attempt that you actually, when you were writing the narrative together, to actually leave that option open? I mean, we see in most horror texts, there's the traditional line of onset, discovery, disbelief, confrontation, resolution, those kind of five steps that you get in most horror novels and pictures and lines from that. Was this an attempt to kind of break away from that and actually introduce the notion of maybe it's a psychological horror, maybe actually what we're seeing here is simply one of the characters has gone rogue and is indeed a psychotic killer, which is horrific in its own way, of course.
Not necessarily, although one of the inspirations for the creatures, apart from it tying in, was around that time scale, there were a lot of reports of gangs dumping bodies in the countryside. There was talk of home invasions. There was a sense of unease with dangerous characters coming into the countryside, let's say. The fact that it just kind of worked out and felt right for Declan to be a guard because putting him in that position, the way that he is, affects people even more. His selfishness has more danger to other people than just himself.
Yeah, and as we said, Declan is still around. I mean, would you intend him to re-emerge in the sequel? Are there plans for Declan to sort of maintain that? Are you looking also for Luke to possibly and Sophie to still emerge? Or is it a case of no, they need to have a break? Or is it a case of they go back to Dublin and now they've got an urban horror in Dublin and there's just no excuse? Maybe they should have actually voted for Brexit.
Well, I won't say what happens with Luke and Sophie and their child if I bring them back, but Declan is certainly going to emerge again because I had such fun writing that character, and I have a kind of a vigilante style role for him in the planned sequel.
Yeah, Elliot, in case people are wondering, why don't you name the child? You've named Willie. Why not name Elliot? Elliot, of course, is Luke's sign from that point of view. Chloe, any closing thoughts for yourself?
I will be reading it, is my closing thought, definitely. And it's been lovely speaking to you for sure. I'm interested to see your next novel because I think that sounds really good. As
Thanks,
Country
Chloe. It was a
Roads.
pleasure to
You're
meet you.
welcome. You bet, and nice to meet you as well. I love the poster as well of Country Roads at the. Did you choose that? You must have chosen exactly how you wanted it to look. Sort of
Absolutely
thing.
not. That
Yeah.
was the
No.
cover artist was a lady called Elizabeth Leggett. She's over in the States. It's an American publisher that brought out
Yeah.
Country Roads, and I think she absolutely nailed the cover design.
It's
It's so
very
spooky. It's like a
eye-catching. Yeah.
portal. But yeah, no, she sent that just from a synopsis and a
Wow.
brief about the book from my publisher, and as soon as I saw it, they said, "Yeah, you don't have to
Yeah, keep it.
change
Mm.
If people wish to find out further details, collieleonard.com presumably is the go-to place as far as the World Wide Web is concerned for details about what you're putting out there, Colin.
Yeah, absolutely. CollieLeonard.com. I ha will have any new releases and old releases there, and there's also some links to some sample stories that I have free to read.
Well, in a few moments' time, we'll be playing Chloe Rose's latest release, which, of course, is Shot You Down, which fits in very nicely, actually, with the cinematic version of C Country Roads, actually, because I think you can actually have that featured within there. It's a nice tale, obviously, about being shot down in all sorts of ways, basically, more kind of a line of that. Anyway, Chloe, you wrote it, you sing it. You know, what's it all about, Shot You Down?
Well, it's about unhealthy relationships, but it's kind of a play on words, you see, because I was meaning shot you down as like when somebody physically makes you feel, you know, cut down or shot down or less, I guess. It's very sad. But you're right, it could also be action James Bond-esque. It could even be, you know, Monster Hunter. Do you know what I mean? And we shoot all the monsters down. You know, I could change the words for this. If it gets into a Netflix series, that would be ace, and I could change the lyrics to suit the novel. You know,
Absolutely,
I'd
and
love
again,
that. I absolutely love
excellent.
that. The irony fits
Yes.
in as well. We'll follow that up because I can't believe you never actually encountered the sweet and little Willy with that. And then we're actually having a little feature on protecting little ears. With a special audiologist who's claiming that children need to adopt the 60% rule. Always have the volume of your devices set no higher than 60% and not longer, and do not spend longer than 60 minutes with your device, even if you're listening to Peppa Pig, which apparently can cause deafness, which I'm sure, Colin, could be an extraordinary a number to actually call how Peppa Pig can actually cause hearing impairments in later life. It's a definite thought, but we have two final questions to put to you, Colin. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on this, your debut as author of the week for the Midweek Drive?
I have absolutely, and I'm very impressed that you know so much about the novel.
Well, when writing is as good as it is in Country Roads, you deserve to devour it in one go. I mean, it's an odd point because obviously There are times where I prefer to actually save the text, but I realized we'd only confirmed that this was going ahead a few hours ago, so I kind of had to move fairly rapidly through it. But it was good, and it wasn't a chore. Believe me, there's another text which I'm working through. All right, I'll cite the name. Anne McCaffrey, she's fairly well known. Dragon Riders of Pern, etc. It's a slog, but never mind. It'll probably work. It'll work its way in the end. That's the important thing. And thank the Lord, Colin, you haven't got any dragons that you're writing out in this particular thing. Although obviously there could be dragons after a fashion emerging in certain way, shape, or form, maybe coming out of Dublin.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. Other people do dragons better than I do. I'll stick to
Well,
the spooks.
there you go. And the next final question, Colin, is can we look forward to connecting with you again? Will you be kind enough to return to the show in the not too distant future?
Absolutely, yeah. Just reach out and I'd be more than happy to come on.
Colin Leonard, writer extraordinaire, huge thanks. Chloe, has it been good for you?
It has. I would like to read it actually. It's I think it'll be my cup of tea with the Munsters and stuff. I might
Okay.
be a bit scared though. I might read it in the day,
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely a text you want to read in the day, to be honest. I think that's the important thing from that point of view. So
No. Read it
anyway.
Halloween at midnight. That's the best time
Oh,
while
that
looking
would
into a
be good.
mirror, eating an apple, a red apple.
Oh no. Oh, that's even spookier. Oh, it'd have to be daytime, I'm afraid. Daytime for me.
Well, for the moment, Chloe Rose and Colin Leonard, huge thanks. And time now for your little number, Chloe.
Break you. the king around town. Dancing, glancing, well, he drives him silly with a star shoe, shimmy, shuffle down.
Hearing, it's a vital sense, it's an important sense. Without our hearing, we'd be significantly impaired. And indeed, the majority of parents in the East Midlands worry about their children having hearing loss in later life. Why? Because they're listening to music too loudly. Now, clearly, that's been a statement really, certainly for the last century, I think. But what is the importance of actually ensuring that you listen at volumes that aren't so loud you can't hear yourself think? Well, we're delighted to welcome audiologist at Boots Hearing Care, Faraz Ashraf, to talk to us about these findings. Faraz, how are you?
Hi, I'm really good. Thank you, Alex. Thank you for having me on your show.
Excellent. And obviously, the medium of radio is something which makes huge use of our hearing sensors, etc. And yet 4 in 10 parents in the East Midlands believe that the maximum volume is OK if it's used for short periods. This is not the case, is it?
It really isn't. And, you know, in a recent study that's been carried out by the World Health Organization, that shows us that, you know, there's more than a billion children, young children or young adults worldwide currently at risk of developing a hearing loss because, you know, we're listening to music far too loud. And that's on headphones or, you know, listening to your favorite bands at concerts and putting your ears at a risk of developing a hearing loss.
We've heard many frightening stories of people who actually believe that unless their ears are actually bleeding, then it's not really a good concert, etc. I mean, these are nightmare scenarios where you think, look, our sense organs and our ears in particular with those semicircular canals and so on, they are sensitive instruments. They're good instruments, but they're sensitive.
Very sensitive. So look, our ear, you know, you've mentioned semicircular ear canals, Alex. I'm quite impressed. You clearly know, you're clearly a man who knows these things when it comes to ears. So we've got an organ in our ear called the cochlea. The cochlea is the size of your size of a fingernail. And it's such a sensitive organ. And in that organ, we've got thousands of tiny cells that are responsible for receiving sound waves. And as we're hearing sounds, they are gently flowing from one side to the other, acting as receptors and sending the signals up to our brain as we hear sound. When we're listening to sounds that are loud, the same hair cells, instead of, you know, flowing gently, they start shaking violently. And the danger is when you're listening to that loud sound for a long period of a time, even if it's a short period of a time, depending on the intensity of the sound, you could permanently damage these cells. And once that hearing is gone, once these hearing cells are damaged, they can't be regenerated. They can't come back.
And indeed, that's part and parcel of the reason why you've put together a fantastic campaign called Protect Little Ears, PLE. So talk us through some of the key aspects about this, including, I think, the fact that children should spend no more than 60 minutes per day listening at 60% of the actual volume to headphone-based audio.
So look, the research that we've done at Boots Hearing Care, it suggests that a third of parents find that their children are listening to volumes that are far too loud. And, you know, 4 in 10 parents in the region are mistakenly believing that the maximum device volume is okay, even if it's used for a short period of a time. So when we look at these stats, we realize that the awareness, the knowledge just isn't there. I'll give you a very personal example, Alex, if I can. So I've got a young niece. She's 4 years old. And as it happens, you know, I spent a couple of weeks with them over the summer, during summer holidays. And what I noticed was, you know, my niece is demanding attention from my sister. And then suddenly my sister brings out the tablet, puts the headphones on her ears, and suddenly my niece goes quiet. And then, you know, I take this keen interest in what's going on here. What is she watching? Why have you done that? And I very quickly realized what's happening is that my niece is listening to this. She was watching Peppa Pig. And it was, you know, too loud when I looked at it, because the volume had been set to a maximum level. And that was because my niece couldn't hear the device or the conversation on the device, because we were talking in the room. And, you know, I think in that case, what we need to be aware of is, instead of increasing the volume, change the environment you're in. So, you know, you can still use the headphones. You know, no one's saying that not to use them, but have the volume set at no more than 60% and use the device for 60 minutes at a time.
And there is a free app that can be downloaded to actually make people aware of how loud certain sounds actually are, because, as you've just said, people might be surprised that it's actually some of those devices that you think aren't really problematic, because, after all, watching Peppa Pig on a tablet is not necessarily the equivalent to a thrash metal concert in full glorious outdoor soundings, etc., but can ultimately, over a long period of time, do a similar amount of damage.
Exactly. So look, there's apps out there that allow you to measure the intensity of sound. We measure the intensity of sound in a level called decibels, right? And if you've got the volume set at around 60 to 70% on a device, that's around 75 decibels. Now, 75 decibels is the same volume as a vacuum cleaner being, you know, constantly on. And that's loud when you think about it. A vacuum cleaner is loud. You can't hear other things outside of that. And when you, you know, compare the two together, you don't want to be listening to that for more than 60 minutes at a time. So even that is a loud sound.
Faraz, it's been awesome connecting with your good self as ever. Can you just share with us the best way in which people can actually get hold of this free app, or indeed follow the work at Boots Hearing Care?
So, look, if you go onto a Google Play Store or an App Store, then just type in, you know, noise level meter, and there's several apps out there that you can download. Pick anyone, you know, pick the one that has the highest ratings, and that's one way of, you know, measuring the sound levels that you're experiencing. And then, look, if you've got a concern about your hearing, go to our website, www.bootshearingcare.com, and get yourself a hearing test booked on your local high street. There's even an online hearing test available that you can use. And, you know, if you're a teenager, or if you're a parent listening to the show and you're concerned about your child, then I would highly recommend please go to your local GP and get an appointment booked with your local paediatric audiologist.
Varaz Ashraf, audiologist at Boots Hearing Care, huge thanks and happy continued hearing, Varaz.
Thank you, Alex.
Well, some may say it's all down to a recent movie that connects Ken in the world with respect to beauty trends, etc. Others may say, no, this was happening long before the barbification of the market, etc. And with more than a fifth of beauty purchases this year being made by men, that basically means you've had a 77% increase in the male beauty market. Now, somebody who is clearly going to be able to put a finger not only on the pulse of this, but also maybe project ahead to where we're going in this particular instance, is indeed fashion and beauty trends expert, the fabulous Shakayla Forbes-Bell. How are you, Shakayla?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks so much, Alex.
Excellent. Okay, so Clearpay have come up with this particular trend. I mean, it's great news if you're in the cosmetics industry, because it seems that certainly in terms of the market, it's increasing exponentially.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, we've seen big name celebs like Idris Elba, Harry Styles coming up with their own beauty brands. So definitely consumers have more options. And like, you know, leading Buy Now Pay Later service Clearpay have shown, men really want to embrace these options. Things like skincare has increased by 33%, fake tan by 44%. You know, all of these different product ranges just give men more opportunity to expand their interest in this area.
Certainly the whole concept of grooming, as it used to be referred to, in terms of obviously, you know, the notion of hair gel and so on and so forth, it seems to be becoming much more relevant. I mean, it's always been relevant. Listen, you can go back to celebrity endorsement of the likes of Billy Wright and folk long before your time in the footballing world, sort of identifying things from that point of view. But as you said, now looking at people like Idris Elba and so on, is that a case of, you know, it's now becoming something where the momentum has reached such a stage that that's it, you know, deal with it. It's a case of whatever your gender, clearly health and beauty products in particular, are here to stay.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think when I was working with Clearpay, we identified maybe two key reasons why we think we're seeing that shift. So the first one, if you look at, you know, rates into nail care amongst males, so that's increased by 103%. So I think one of these reasons is creativity. Like you mentioned, men are embracing their Kennergy, you know, they want to experience that fun. They've heard about dopamine dressing. So I think it's naturally to extend that to dopamine beauty. You know, studies show that embracing creativity is good for your well-being. You know, it provides a sense of fun, a bit of escapism in your day-to-day life. So of course men want to get in on that too. Another reason is, you know, just self-care. Another insight from Clearpay said that serum was the most popular product amongst males. This is a luxurious product. It's something that you're rubbing into your skin, you know, taking time to really like nourish it. And studies show that when we have this kind of tactile stimulation of our faces, it releases this chemical called oxytocin. So that's the feel-good hormone. It makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside. So of course men are understanding that they can experience this self-care too. And you know, who wouldn't want to have that sense of joy, that sense of happiness, that sense of comfort in their day-to-day routines?
Billy, we'll be having spa days before too long, and that'll be a whole new area. Fascinated to see that London, Birmingham, Wales, Scotland and Manchester are the areas where the biggest spenders are actually seen. Does that mean that citizens or males in Newcastle and possibly Lincoln and the northeast and so on, we just don't care? Or is it just a case of, well, there are always savages in Lincoln. It's what to be expected.
I definitely don't think it's not about their maybe not caring. Maybe they're still thinking about, you know, those kind of invisible consumption habits that we do see amongst men. So those are things like maybe the moisturizer, the cleanser. Maybe they just haven't caught up to the more adventurous men in London, Birmingham, Wales and Scotland and Manchester. But the trends are looking like they might be on the bandwagon too.
celebrity endorsement can be a bit of a mixed bag of things from that point of view. As we said, we can go back into the notion of Kevin Keegan and Henry Cooper advertising Brute aftershave and thinking, what? Look it up on YouTube. It's an extraordinary sort of series of ads. But when you mention people like Pharrell Williams, obviously Tom Daley, you also mentioned Idris Elba. Is this something where, in terms of, you know, getting the right celebrity to endorse your product is critical for the actual beauty products?
I think it's about having that inclusivity and diversity there, allowing all types of men from all different walks of life to see that positive feedback of men embracing beauty and skincare, and they can identify with it. So, you know, you have kind of older males from, like you said, like Pharrell, and then you have the younger generation with the Harry Styles, and you have the Drakes, and you have, you know, these young rappers as well, like Lil Yachty, and like all of these people really embracing this kind of male grooming. So men from all different walks of life are able to see someone and identify themselves and think, maybe this is something I can try too. And now, as we've mentioned, there's products available for them that allows them to explore this.
With obviously a classic case of gender fluidity occurring, can you see competitiveness emerging between the genders here or across the genders in terms of obviously people fighting for different brands of beauty product and claiming that their particular skincare is far superior?
I don't know about that. I know it's been a long gripe of many women of having their husbands or their boyfriends or even their brothers stealing their cosmetics. I think it's going to even increase less rivalry. You know, now men have something that they can identify with that feels like just like it's just for them. And everybody wants to feel that they're included, that they are seen and they are being catered to specifically. So I think it's just going to be a happy turn for everybody.
Well, that's positive to consider, Shakayla. Where do people actually go to find out more details about this particular survey and its findings?
So if you want to jump on this trend and explore all of the male beauty categories, you can head over to clearpay.co.uk.
You see, I always tend to be a person who actually says that beauty comes from within, basically, and that's a critical side of things. You can put all of the kind of material on the outside, but if you've not got that inner beauty, it's all pointless, really. But that's by the by. It's a deeply philosophical, metatextual note to finish this thing on. But for the moment, Shakayla Forbes-Bell, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on, and happy trend watching.
Thank you. Thank you so much.